Welcome to an all-new episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. As always, I'm your host, Tyler. Matt could not join us today, so subbing in is the great SB Unfurled. Unfurled, thank you for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, we're going to keep this one a little bit, well, on the much quicker end by the standards of this show, but just wanted to wrap a bow on the VCU and St. Louis seasons here, and then the fact that we somehow only have one coaching search in the A-10, I think that deserves more of our attention. But I guess we can just start with the games here. First one on Saturday, St. Louis falls to Michigan in what I forget who to credit this with, but I saw one national media member at one point refer to it as the most competitive 19-point blowout they had ever seen.
Yeah, it was good hoops. Like it was exciting. It wasn't your typical, like, if the A-10's getting blown out by a Big Ten team or an SEC team. It didn't remind me of that. Like St. Louis was very high paced. On some plays, like matched the athleticism in some regard. With like Thames, a couple other their guys looked pretty good, I thought. But then you look at the score and it's like, oh, Michigan's up 8 and St. Louis punches back, and then Michigan's up 13, and it was just kind of a few runs in there, but it was still an entertaining game, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, if they're playing anyone else in the country the way that they played in that one, I feel like it's a single digit loss at worst. Like, even if they wouldn't have beaten Duke, I don't think they would have beaten Arizona. Who knows, maybe they could have beaten Florida, given what happened the next day. But I think they would have been able to hang around with those teams. This was just such a specifically awful matchup where you have this coach in Dusty May who wants to do things the exact same way as Josh Schertz, but just has better players than Josh Schertz. And this just massive size where Robbie Avila in his final St. Louis game really just did not get to go out on a high note because all of his rim defense issues really got exposed by Adey Mara in this game. Just had no chance of keeping that 7-4 frame away from the hoop. And then, good Lord, I mean, Yaxel Lendenborg looked like he could have been the best player in the country if that was the first time you ever saw him that game.
25 points for Lendenberg, I think. But, you know, he just looks like that NBA body. I thought Avila struggled, obviously, in the first half from what we're used to seeing. But, I think, like, when I watched the Bonas St. Louis game, St. Louis came into the RC and just absolutely blew the doors off Bonas, scored whenever they wanted to. I think they probably could have won by 50 if they wanted to. It looked like a whole different weight class. St. Louis and Michigan, like, kind of in that same regard. Michigan kind of playing a very up-tempo, similar style to St. Louis, but it was just that, like, Lendenberg really impressed, like you said, Adey Mara as well. So I have Michigan winning the whole tournament,
as do I,
on my main bracket over Duke. So legit team. And in St. Louis too, I had that game on, and I watched the first half pretty closely, but then the second half I had some distractions. I have like a 3-year-old who is just going wild back here sometimes, so wasn't super locked into the second half. Also, side note, did think it was cool. I'm from Western New York, go to Buffalo all the time. St. Louis seemed to really enjoy Buffalo. Saw the mascot, the Billiken, jumping through a table. Saw people getting wings, hitting up some good wing spots. So that was cool to see. And, you know, just in general, like, St. Louis, I feel like, in a bygone era, I guess now, would have been a 6 or 7 seed probably at worst. So it's tough getting the 8-9 draw against a big physical SEC team in Georgia, to some extent. But, they looked phenomenal against Georgia. I know you already recapped that, but wanted to shout them out. That was a great win for the A-10. And then, really just having to turn around 2 days later and play maybe the best team in the country. That's a tough draw for a team that I thought should have had like a legit Sweet 16 opportunity, but that's, it's difficult bracketing, I guess, for them.
Yeah, it almost feels like they needed to take one more loss. And if they end up as a 10 now, I don't think any of the seven seeds are any, or let me rephrase that. I think all the seven seeds are way better than Georgia. So they would have had a significantly more difficult first round game, but they would have had a better shot against, say, a God, these two seeds are pretty good too. I think they could have beat
They are,
UConn.
yeah.
Like those are the two, is
Purdue would
like
have been
UConn and
tough.
Florida. I think they could have had a chance. Or an injured
Yeah.
Iowa State.
Yeah. And I can't remember exactly who the set wasn't St. Mary's a seven, but that would have been
Yeah.
like them to put St. Louis against St. Mary's, I guess. But yeah, just a tough draw. Bonas was a when they won the A-10 tournament in 21, were in that 8-9 game and had to take on a an SEC team in LSU who was way bigger and way deeper, more athletic at some positions. So that 8-9 game's already kind of brutal, and then you get a tough matchup like LSU. But St. Louis did phenomenal in their first round game, which was really good for them in the league.
The only other thing I feel like it's worth pointing out from the second round game, there was that Brady Dunlap 3-for-3 streak late in the first half from deep that really, I feel like without that, this game loses a ton of excitement. It kept the game at single digits through the end of the first half and into the
Right.
early second half, kind of gave some hope going into halftime. So Dunlap really just kind of kept, he kept the mood in the building good. So shout out to him on that. And I guess the only other thing afterwards. Oh.
Transfer some from St. John's,
Yeah.
right? Wasn't he at St. John's last year? He was the one guy I thought was going to light up Bonas when St. Louis came in, and it ended up being the Sharma dude.
Yeah. And the rumors coming out after the game, Trey Green and Amari McCautry both told Stu Durando that they're likely coming back for next year. We're now hearing the rumors that Sharma and Kellen Thames return announcements are probably on their way. So St. Louis, it looks like they're going to keep Josh Schertz unless this impending North Carolina opening potentially screws things up. But if he comes
Yeah.
back, it also looks like a lot of the core guys are coming back as well.
Was just talking to my buddy about that, kind of joking about, oh, North Carolina's opening up. Are they going to give Schertz a call? And we were kind of talking about how like North Carolina has had that more, I guess, Schertz-ish personality, like, with Roy Williams and Hubert Davis. Schertz seems like a guy that like kind of fits. I have no idea if there's any interest at all, but like, the Danny Hurley or Nate Oates types, it doesn't really fit with like the Carolina, but they could pretty much have their pick of almost any coach in the country other than, 10 to 20 maybe at most.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume like an Oates or an Underwood or an Otzelberger or someone like that. But even if they did go for a young up and comer, Ben McCollum beating Florida with Iowa probably now just tosses him ahead of Schertz in the pecking order. So
Yeah, maybe.
I would assume that that's probably above anything else what would likely keep him away from that job, although. Then again, some other really good job could open up. All of a sudden, he could maybe end up at, say, Illinois or Vanderbilt or something like that. But I don't see it as likely that he would automatically take one of those if that became an option.
That would be a meteoric rise, for sure, from D2 to North Carolina in 3 years.
Yeah. Oh, five, because 2 years at Indiana State, too.
Oh, 5 years it would be, yeah.
Yeah, still the point still stands.
Yeah.
My one thought from Buffalo as well, because I got talked into going up for this game on Saturday, made a
Oh,
day trip
nice.
out of it. I believe I counted seven different A-10 schools represented while I was walking around the concourse. Shout out to the middle-aged dude in the DeJour Reeves Fordham jersey. I also
Nice.
saw a lot of elderly gentlemen in Bonnet shirts. So,
Very nice. Oh yeah. Oh,
It
they love Bona games in that arena. Yeah, we haven't played in that arena in quite a while, but yeah, there's a lot of older alums in South Buffalo who are probably at the bars drinking and then going over to the game.
There was also a fat man in one of those like skin tight warm up shirts that they wear. Remember the branded ones that they've had made a big deal of at the NCAA tournament the last couple of years? There was one gentleman in a 2024 Dayton branded warm up that was his gut was just spilling out of the white shirt. It was
Ooh,
not the right choice for
yeah,
public wear.
that's hot. Yeah, or it is the right choice. That's Buffalo right there. Did you see a lot of, probably a lot of Sabres gear? They're on fire right now. And obviously Bills gear, I'm sure.
There was not a lot of Bills gear. Then again, there was also
It's
just an
Sabres time.
overwhelming amount of Michigan and Michigan State people there. So,
Oh, that's right. Michigan State too, yeah.
good crew of SLU fans.
Yeah.
They were the SLU.
Yep.
I guess that should be my last point in this game. The SLU fan section, both in terms of size and enthusiasm, was so much better than Louisville. Like just absolutely dwarfed them, and so that was impressive.
It was good, probably as good in Pittsburgh on Sunday or better.
It was probably a little better for the A10 semifinals than it was for
For the semis.
for the Dayton game.
For the date. Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, not the championship.
And then I'd
Yeah.
say it was a couple more there than in Buffalo, which makes sense since they could pre-plan that one out.
True. Yeah. Yeah. And Pittsburgh's like an easy drive to Buffalo, but I'm sure they had their flights going.
Yeah. All right, VCU gets blown out by Illinois. I don't know how much there is to really say about this game. Terrence Hill was fantastic, as we thought in the preview could be possible against Illinois' defense. He went for 17. Nick Lewis hurts his ankle in the first minute of the game, and VCU just could never generate enough offense with just Hill being the only guard going. Lazar Djokovic had 2 points. And this one was like 10 minutes in, it already seemed like it was about to be over. VCU kept the scoreline respectable for a little while, gave us reason to keep watching, but they go 7 for 32 from three against a significantly superior athletic team. They're just not going to win that game.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why I did it, but I took VCU plus 12 and a half. I was, feeling it, having a couple beers, and I was like, you know what? Let's just do it. And right away I was like, oh shit, that was a terrible bet. You could just kind of tell within, 4 to 8 minutes. VCU had little spurts that were fun. I think it was Tyrell Ward had like an awesome alley-oop to cut it to three going into maybe the U12 or U8. And I was like, okay, maybe, maybe this team will hang around and get going. I thought Barry Evans looked pretty good. He's not always the offensive threat, but he was hitting some shots. He was looking definitely like he belonged out there for sure for at least the first half. And then kind of similar to the St. Louis game, I feel like St. Louis maybe hung around a little bit more, but after 12 to 16 minutes, it just kind of gets out of hand and it doesn't really, there's no counter punch big enough to really get back into the game against some of these teams.
Yeah, minus 16 on the boards didn't help either.
No.
Shockingly, I would have thought it was the other way. This was a significantly worse result than Duquesne had against Illinois in the same spot 2 years ago. The Dukes were only minus 7. Felt like they got kind of abused on the boards in that one. But I think we're starting to learn A10 team round two against Illinois is just probably not going to go very well at this point.
Or A10 team round two against pretty much anyone. I was kind of mentioning that too to a buddy the other day, like just how difficult it's going to be to get to the Sweet 16, how much harder it is now. It feels like, in years past, You could look at a Dayton team or even that Richmond team that was older that went on a run late and be like, okay, these guys have been together forever and they have, a lot of experience, a lot of skill. You could see them knocking off a team like Iowa in the first round, and then, which I think Richmond did, and then, winning a game against some of these teams. But it feels like they hang around for some of the first half, maybe 12 minutes or so, and then it really kind of gets out of hand quick. That seems to be the theme.
Yeah, 0-10 for the league since 2014. Dayton beat Syracuse. That was the last one. That was the last second round victory. If you want to pull in that full day, it's
Oh,
1-11 because St. Louis actually lost earlier that afternoon. But yeah,
wow.
it has been bleak. Although you do start to wonder if the best chance might be one more year of Josh Schertz with a veteran roster coming back and an NIL figure that is being rumored at numbers that are not try to win the A10 numbers, but try to be in the top 20 nationally numbers. So
Wow.
next year they might be set up to potentially be the team to break that drought.
I mentioned something, and I was called out by a couple of St. Louis fans who would know better than me, but I felt like last year in the offseason, I heard some of the top teams, the top two or three teams in the A10, like wanted to get between four to six, or even, I guess 5 plus 6 plus million by at least next year. I don't know if any of them are close to that this year. I thought I heard GW was around 4 million, and there's probably three teams above them. But that St. Louis is striking while the iron's hot, and they have a lot of big donors who are invested. Seems like they have a really good thing going with shirts, and they're in a really good spot right now, it seems like.
Yeah, I heard 8. I heard 10 at one point. Like that's
Wow.
dominate the A10 level numbers if that actually comes true. I mean, Dayton and VCU will probably settle in somewhere. I think you hit it right in that 4 to 6 range for next year.
Yeah, and I hope I think St. Louis is going to be pretty competitive. I haven't really heard a figure on them, but there are probably maybe not a handful, a few teams that are going to be at three, I would say. But sometimes these numbers are inflated, and this is kind of just what you hear in the rumor mill. I don't know how true any of it actually is, but it does seem like there's some relevance and some truth to a lot of these numbers.
Yeah, I mean, if St. Louis is anything above 6, they're swinging for a different level, basically. So even if 11's,
And I mean,
I
VCU.
don't think 11 would be true, but even 7 would be good enough. Oh, unfurled, we have a breaking right now. Not that it's
What?
surprising, but we talked about it like 10 minutes ago. The UNC job is open.
Oh, okay.
Hubert
I'm
Davis
not
just got
surprised.
fired.
I'm not surprised. It seems like there were quite a bit of legit rumors going around about that. Man, that will start a big domino effect. I feel like this happened last year, the year before. I can't remember who it was, but there was a big name that dropped late, I guess. Not too late, but really, was it? No, it wasn't Pearl, because he just had his son come in. It
No,
was someone,
it
and
was
the
the
domino
Andy
effect was
Enfield
crazy.
thing that went.
Okay,
It was Andy Enfield, the Musselman, to Calipari, to Mark Pope, to Kevin Young.
That's what it was.
So
So this could have some. Yeah, this could be that.
congratulations to VCU, because I'm almost certain if Carolina just finishes off that game, Hubert Davis does not get fired. So
Right. That's true.
just
VCU ended
the
Hubert
embarrassment of
Davis.
the comeback.
Wow. Man, that's some good news that has a little bit of A10 relevance right there.
Yeah, on two levels. It could lead to
Terrence Hill
Josh
ended
Schertz getting
Hubert
out,
Davis.
and Terrence Hill ended Hubert Davis.
Terrence Hill ended him. Wow.
All right, but we brought
What
you
if
on.
they're like, screw this, we're hiring Martelli? Screw you guys.
That would be legitimately hilarious. They were so impressed. That would be the Doc
Then
Rivers move.
Hubert Davis, then to UNC or to VCU. Who says no?
VCU's not dumb enough to do that.
Trade coaches.
Yeah, VCU's smarter than that. They're not taking that deal.
VCU's on a really good run of coaches, my God. Like they just reload every couple years. And Utah State in the same way. It's wild that the program just stays above the fray no matter who comes in, and it's just a launch pad to the P5, just
Yeah.
like the players are.
Congrats to Phil Martelli Jr., who's probably already on a ticking clock towards a massive job and a massive raise at some point in the next couple of years. So, but I did bring you on to talk about stunningly the only vacancy in the A10. I think at various different points this year, you could have made the case that 11 of the 14 different jobs could have potentially opened up. A couple of potential jump ups, but the Martelli to Providence rumors just seem to not really go anywhere. Schertz signs the extension. We should note Martelli got an extension as well. Tony Skin, I talked about a couple episodes ago. It just didn't seem like the right promotion job was going to be there for him this year. The right fit of level that he could jump up to with a job that he would probably want. Mooney and Grant don't retire. Archie Miller doesn't get fired. It doesn't look like the new AD is going to make a move there, although he hasn't been there that long. So the only guy moving out is the great Mark Schmidt. And St. Bonaventure, we've been kind of sitting here with no news for a couple of weeks. So I guess at this point, the fact that it's been so quiet, that the safe bet is that it's probably Mike McDonald whose team is still playing.
I think that's a very safe bet. I think McDonald was the odds-on favorite. I said this earlier too. From the jump, like March 7th, when you hear Schmidt's out, I think Mike McDonald. The news came out with a list of four or five guys, and you look at McDonald and you think about it, and the way other people were talking about it, I think Vanderpool, who is an assistant with the Wizards now. He's been around the NBA for a long time, had a big impact on Damian Lillard in Portland, had a quite a few head coaching interviews. I think he had a little bit of early juice, but I think it's always been McDonald. And I think, once that team's done, they play Wednesday night in the Final Four, Elite Eight, for D2. And if they lose, I think we could even hear this by the end of the week. I would guess. That's what I think.
So we'll just dip into the bio real quick, and then we can kind of go over any potential long shots. So Mike McDonald, back before he won the Super Bowl this year with the Seahawks, former Canisius coach, and I guess we should start from the beginning, Bona alum, but Canisius coach for 9 seasons, brutally tough job. A school that has basically like never won anything of value in the D1 at the D1 level. He was over 500 twice. He had a 20-win season back in 2001 with the Golden Griffins. Unceremoniously gets fired in 2006. Record of 108 and 153. It's nothing special. There certainly have been worse coaches at Canisius than that, but then he dips down, goes to a Division III school in Buffalo, is decently successful there, makes a few tournaments, ends up at Damon, Division II school in Buffalo. Started out pretty slow. He's been there since 2015, should note. Started out pretty slow, made an Elite Eight in 2021, won 20 games the next 2 years, didn't make the tournament. And now is on a huge run the past 2 seasons, goes to the quarterfinals last year, and is now sitting in the quarterfinals this year in a one-loss season.
I was thinking earlier, like, what schools would give Mike McDonald an interview other than Bona's, obviously, with the alum connection? Like, would it be a Canisius or a Niagara type, or would you even maybe have to go to like the NEC or something like that? So I don't think he would be on the radar of any other A10 school, obviously, but the connection and how he has kind of, rekindled his career in the D2 ranks. Canisius, like you said, is a really tough place to win. So I almost don't even really hold that against him. But he is on a run now, and he has so many Western New York connections. Graduated, I think, the same year as our AD graduated, a couple years before Woj did. So I'm sure those three are tight and have been in touch. And he's helped us get some players. I think he helped us get Cade and Charles last year. And he, I would imagine, really, really wants the job. But on top of that, I think most important is the money play here. I think this is a, from even what you saw Rothstein put out, Bonas kind of looking at the calculus of how much they were paying Schmidt at around probably 1.5 million. And, we were just talking about NIL numbers. Like Bonas, I've heard maybe around 1.5 last year. I don't know exactly how accurate that is. If I had to guess, that's what I would say around there. And they want to get up to not double that, obviously, but they would like to, I'm sure, get up to 2 or 2.5 next year or the year after. And how do you do that at Bonas with a lot of donors who are probably getting tapped out, and it's obviously not a big donor base, not too many alums. So how do you get to that number when you also have to pay 1.5 million? I think this is a play where you can get a guy who's familiar and who has rejuvenated his career, and there maybe is a little upside despite him being 60. And you kind of say, hey, if we can get him for a million less or 800,000 less, and we put that 800,000 or $1 million into paying players, like I think that plays into it a lot more than, his resume from 25 years ago or whatever, which definitely matters. But I think what we're looking at now is just kind of a different approach that not just Bonas, but I think a lot of other teams across the country might have to take on.
I get the saving money part. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, especially paying 2 million to someone who is not Mark Schmidt. And I'm not sure the difference in the potential up and coming young coach at 1.8 versus, I don't know, 1.1 is going to net you that significant of a spectacular candidate. Where if it's McDonald specifically, the piece that I just continue to struggle with is that we have not seen someone succeed t making this big of a leap in one step. Like, if he had left Damon and gone to, say, Binghamton for 2 years, and he's coming off of an 18-win season and that just absolute garbage job, then I would say, yeah, it's probably a little bit of a stretch, but why the hell not? It feels like such a jump from D2 all the way up to the A10. And the fact that he is an alum with so many connections to the people making this decision is what makes me a little bit worried. That this is their buddy, and that's why they're hiring him, as opposed to if they were taking a swing on some successful D2 coach in like Florida, I might think differently about it.
There was a report, or I guess a tweet that went out a few days ago. It might have been on Friday, out of nowhere. Like, oh, Bonas has interviewed 15 candidates. I was kind of like, 15? That
They
seems
should.
like
Honestly, they
a
should.
ton. But just randomly putting that out, I don't know if, they're. It's kind of a more of a smoke screen, even though they have this kind of wink and nod from McDonald, or if they're maybe interviewing candidates for, you always want to pick guys' brains too, but and do somewhat of a search. But it seems like the McDonald thing had been kind of maybe even in the works before that happened. So you wonder, are they interviewing for assistant type gigs? Like, I've also heard maybe a guy that could come on the staff would be like a Reggie Witherspoon type. So
Was that the
yeah,
terrible
I kind of
Buffalo
agree.
coach?
He was at Buffalo, he was at Canisius too, and he does like color commentary for a lot of our games on ESPN
Oh,
Plus.
yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know. There's a lot of rumors going around right now. I don't know anything for sure, but I would be really shocked at this point if it wasn't McDonald. And you're absolutely right to have that worry. And when you say multiple people making the decision, like I think obviously Beretta will have to sign off on it, the AD, but this is Woj's search. This is Woj's thing now. And we're really at a crossroads for the program. I can't think of a bigger crossroads really than the one we're at now. If, Schmidt's departure and Woj's involvement in all things around the program, and this is his hire. This is his gambit, his entire idea with how to structure the payments and where the money goes and how we have to reallocate stuff. It's the fans definitely, I feel like have been really kind of pessimistic about a potential McDonald hire. It's not something that's gonna really rejuvenate the fan base or inspire, but it doesn't, honestly, to me personally, it doesn't matter who they hire. Like I there's no off-season championships, there's not going to be any instant gratification, so no matter who it is, I'm going to be like, okay, well, I have no choice but to give this guy a chance. So a lot of fans are going to hate it. I understand it. It's not super exciting whatsoever. The flip side is that Woj is, I think, just making the calculus that we're going to have this coach, and the trade-off is going to be that we're going to have, a couple guys who could be all A-10 player, a couple guys who are going to start and be like our go-to guys. So, you have to take that trade-off. You looking at it only through the prism of the coaching change and the coaching search, I think we're very accustomed to that. But in this case, like the flip side is that you're going to probably have hopefully better players, but that gets into a whole nother thing with like who's doing the player evaluation. Like Schmidt and his staff are so good at evaluating talent. Who's going to be doing that? Is McDonald good enough at that? Like that's forget like the X's and O's and stuff. I'm not as worried about that. It's player evaluation. Like if you are making this decision and this calculation that, we're gonna get this coach for cheap and put that toward players, you better not whiff on guys. Like Grovik was a whiff last year, and that was a huge story in the offseason. This guy was gonna be, all A-10 at NBA potential, and he's toward the bottom of the A-10 in usage. There are games where he'd play a couple minutes here. I hope he improves, but like you can't whiff on a guy like that for, 20, 15, 20% of your salary cap, so to speak.
Was Osesui a Woj guy or a Schmidt guy? Because I've heard both, and I would like to have him back if I was a Bonaventure fan.
For sure. And I thought he should have maybe got a few more minutes in certain games, but I mean, who am I
He
to
was
question any of that stuff?
pretty
But
good the
like,
last
oh,
month of the season.
he was good. I feel like I don't know this for sure. I didn't hear that he's necessarily a Woj guy. I think Woj maybe took Schmidt out to see a certain player in Italy. And Schmidt actually was like, actually, I like this Osesui. I want him. So I did hear that he was a guy that Schmidt definitely wanted. But I also heard last offseason that there aren't gonna be Woj guys. Like this Woj was gonna kind of open doors for the staff and give them new connections, but have no say in who the staff actually takes. And now I kind of am hearing conflicting stuff like, oh no, there's definitely guys that Woj wanted on that team, but I don't think Osesui was one of them. I think he was mainly a Schmidt guy. So in Ermakov, I don't know how much you remember him. He hardly played because he got injured. Freshman point guard from Russia. I think he had like a foot or ankle injury. Really impressed with him. Like he looks like he could be legit, and I'm hoping they can get him back too. And then, Grahovic and Lunati, I don't want these guys to be like starters, but I think, and also from what I've heard about McDonald's, the style that he would run, like I think Grahovic, a guy like that, could fit in really well. So those four, I would say, are guys that I would like to have back.
I thought Linotti got a raw deal because he can shoot the hell out of the ball. I'm not sure he can play any defense, but he at least has one tangible, valuable skill on this team. And that's another guy I'd like to see back as well. So,
He can't play D.
yeah, he
That it was
can't.
bad when he was out there. But then, like, also he did come in to be a sharpshooter, but he was 5 of 28 in A10 play. He was 18% from deep. On the year, 11 of 45. So he's only shooting 24%. And a lot of that is he's not really getting into his rhythm. He's playing spot minutes. It's tough to shoot at a high percentage when you're not really in the flow of the game. But like he did come in to be a sharpshooter, and his numbers weren't really there, and his defense was not good whatsoever. So, you wanted a guy like Amari Marshall in that role, or Air McCaw filling in the backcourt, but both of those guys got hurt. And Lunati, I didn't think was ready for A10 play, but similar to last year, we had to have some guys step up due to injuries.
So let's just pull back here to wrap up the coaching search. So if this is a
Yeah, because
surprise,
people don't want to, sorry to interrupt, but like A10 people listening don't really give a shit about bonus season, I should realize.
anyone who's listening to this in April is at least paying attention. So, but let's say maybe this is just a really deep search. And they are just turning over every rock and stone that they can. And it's not actually a given that it's McDonald or David Vanterpool. Joey Gallo, who seems like he's probably just out of Bonas' price range, but the last month it seemed like he was just destined to get a better job. Providence went elsewhere. It looks like Boston College is going to go elsewhere. Rhode Island never opened up. So maybe he could slot in at Bonaventure, or just stay at Merrimack another year. But do you have another guy? So I'm going to say it's not McDonald, Vanterpool, or Gallo. Is there a guy that you look at and just say, yeah, you know what? I hope that this guy gets a fair shake and gets an interview and gets a chance to get the job.
There's a report that came out on, I want to say, Friday. This Ludwig dude from Santa Clara, and if you look at his resume, I don't he the report came out like right before their awesome game against Kentucky, so it probably got lost, and maybe a lot of people didn't see it. But that was intriguing. I looked at his resume, and I'm going to pull it up real quick because I put out a picture of it. Entering his 10th season as a member of Herb Sendek's coaching staff, associate head coach at Santa Clara for since July. He's been an assistant coach there for 9 years. And there was just a lot. I'm not going to read his whole bio or anything, but there was a lot of stuff in there, like about his recruiting and some of his connections in Europe and South America, Canada. Just seems like he's been on Sendek's staff for a long time, and associate head coach on a really good staff. He was Jason Ludwig was the name that I was like, oh, this guy seems like a good candidate.
That was an interesting one. That one actually was connected. Mine is a way out of left field. And I didn't know if he'd be in their financial range until I saw him connected with Pepperdine the other day, which I can't imagine is paying much better at all than Bonaventure. Probably is actually paying less. But Griff Aldrich, who won for a while at a terrible Longwood job, is now the head assistant for Ryan Odom down at Virginia. That just seems like the kind of sneaky guy who was just never quite good enough to get that like high mid major job. And so he bailed and went back to the high major world. This is the kind of guy that is maybe a quarter of a notch below where you would traditionally look if you're Bonaventure, but if you're trying to spend a lot less money, it's still a quality coach who I think would have been interesting in this job.
I just looked this guy up, and he looks like if Olean was a person, like it would be this
Yeah.
guy. If you, I'm looking at a picture of him like holding the basketball and pointing. Has a little bit of Jeff Neubauer look to him, so yeah, like that pick.
Yeah, that's mine. It seems like he might. Oh my God, his Wikipedia page looks way too much like Neubauer. Holy crap.
Really?
It's bad. Actually, now I kind of don't like
Yeah.
this. He looks too
Yeah.
much.
You just
Although
gotta
he's
take his
wearing a
shirt off.
suit. So.
Yeah, he needs to have no shirt. Yeah.
All right, last thing
I like a
here.
good side.
Oh.
Go ahead. Yep.
Dan Leibowitz, and now officially at his press conference, new commissioner of the A-10, comes in as from being associate commissioner of the Big East. This is a guy I really want to dig in and do my homework before we go deep on evaluating the
Yeah.
hire on the pod. But I think he already understands the assignment because he gave A-10 Twitter a distraction for like a good 6 hours today with the remark that he would like the conference tournament to be permanently in one spot. For them to have that association with a certain city come championship week. And everyone got to basically fight about that for the entirety of the day. Do you have a pick for the permanent A10 tournament site?
Do I have a budget to do like any renovations or anything, or no?
I don't think the conference is going to pay for renovations to a place. So I'm going to say no.
Well, I've always thought it would be really sexy to have it in the Palestra. Just the Philly is just so A10. I get that it's post Temple, so and you know, Chaney was kind of the face of the league, and it's different now, but the Palestra would be such a cool place to have it, I think. But I get that people say that, you know, it's not updated enough. There's not the amenities or the, you know, the infrastructure there to house kind of what they need to do for 14 teams. So I would go Brooklyn. Every time I've been to Brooklyn, it's been awesome. That's been my, I've been to DC for one. I went to obviously the COVID one that was in UD Arena, and Atlantic City back in the day, which the memories were awesome, but I just don't, you just can't have it at Boardwalk. So Brooklyn has been easily my favorite. I feel like there's one other one. I've been to Pittsburgh a bunch too, but not really a basketball town, more of a pro sports city. Love Pittsburgh, but Brooklyn would be my top choice, I think.
The biggest Palestra issue, honest to God, is I genuinely don't think anyone can sit in there for four straight games. Like
Small seats.
just no, they're just old benches. Like
Oh, it's the bleachers.
we're gonna have people with back problems by Friday. Like honestly,
Is it all
that's the
bleachers?
biggest
I gotta
issue.
look that up.
At least in the end zones it is. I think it's at least like 80% bleachers.
I'm looking at it now. Yeah, it looks like there's seats along the, it's kind of how Bonas is set up, to be honest. Seats along the sideline. It looks like bleachers on the baseline, but if you get student sections in there, that'd be pretty cool in that small, kind of small gym to have one huge student section on one baseline and another huge student section on the other baseline, just so close. And then all the fans around it, like that would be so loud, so crazy. Just the arched roof, the banners, the lighting, the old floor, like it would just be it would be so cool.
I've been pretty vocal. I think it should be in DC permanently. It sounds like the Capital One Arena does not want to have it every year. They're good with just kind of rotating in the A10 for a year and like the ACC for a year and taking a year off and stuff like that. It also seems like the general take from people is they just don't like hanging out in DC quite as much. I would forever be against going to Brooklyn every year. It's so ridiculously expensive. It's a pain to get to.
Yeah,
I
true.
just don't like the arena. Like Barclays just kind of sucks moving around within it. I do feel like everyone was going through this, and we kind of just started falling backwards into Pittsburgh just being the answer, because I'm not sure there is a right answer. And that might just, I'm not sure it even checks the most boxes, but I feel like it just doesn't cross out the most things that could be an issue.
I love Pittsburgh. I try to get down there a couple times a year. It's a super easy drive. Like Bonas, if Bonas was good and it was in Pittsburgh, which it was, I think in 2017, Bonas was pretty good.
They brought a
Had
whole
like
student
Jalen Adams,
section, like a massive, like
Adams and
500
Mobley.
person student section that year.
Yeah, like it's an easy drive. It's all highway. Just go west to Erie and right down to Pittsburgh. Probably you can do it in 3 hours. We went, I think Bonas lost their first game to Rhode Island. That was when Rhode Island had a really good team too. And I just wanted to be there to party for the whole weekend, and they just got bounced early. So I haven't gotten the full A-10 experience in Pittsburgh, which kind of sucks because I love going there for different events and stuff. And even when Bonas used to play Duquesne down there, I would go, and it would be on a Saturday. Hit up Carson Street and go to Jack's and all those cool bars.
It is only 4.5 hour drive from the Riley Center to the Giant Center in Hershey, PA, which was getting thrown
Saw
out by
someone
a
put
couple
that.
of people
What
today.
was it? The Giant Center? I'm looking
The
this up.
Giant Center in Hershey, PA.
What's it seat? Oh, it's
Like
a NHL or
8,000.
a
Yeah, it's a minor
hockey
league
arena.
hockey arena.
Cool. I don't see any pictures of basketball in there, though. I never even had
They play the
basketball.
high school state finals there.
Okay.
And they played
Oh,
a
I'm looking at it
terrible
now.
Pitt Penn State game this season.
Wow. As someone who likes arenas and stuff, I have never seen this arena. That's pretty
Right.
cool. I'll have to look more into it.
We'll
That'd be
give everyone a
unique. That'd
chance
be
to check it
awesome.
out. We can go to Hershey
Yeah.
Park, go ride the ride after the final. It'll be
I
nice.
want to go there, if not this summer, next summer anyway. So that would be a great spot.
I feel like we got to just end it on that one. So, Unfurled, where can all the good people find your work?
Just SB Unfurled on Twitter and Instagram. Gonna be an interesting off season for the Bonnies. Probably the most interesting off season that I can remember. It's a big ass gamble, a big risk, and I hope it works out. But yeah, you can find me on those two spots.
Yeah, go follow Unfurled, get his thoughts when this hire truly happens, whether it's Mike McDonald, whether it's David Vanterpool, whether it's someone that we're not even expecting. Such is the life of search season that could happen. But Unfurled, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, everyone come back, check in. If Dayton or St. Joe's wins their NIT quarterfinal game, we'll be back. We'll do a preview, the NIT Final Four. If they both lose, we'll be back to close out the season probably in 2 weeks. So, regardless, check your podcast feeds for that.